Hello and welcome to a new episode of Football is Life.
And sometimes death.
I'm Andy.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Noah.
Yeah, the boys are back for a special episode. We're going to talk today about yesterday's game was Nashville, and since the boys are here, we're going to talk about more international and European football. This is why we have the boys with us today. All right, let's talk about the fun game of Nashville. Quick shots. How do you guys feel about yesterday's game?
I mean, first off, love that we're finally through to the next round and got that off of our back, and then we can rest easy at least for about a week or so until we, you know, see who we're playing up next with Atlanta or Columbus, which either one is going to be a tough game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Noah. the score lines of 1-0 just mean stress for as long as humanly possible, basically, in some ways. But
84 minutes.
I truly am excited about the opportunity, even looking at the bracket of Orlando and Atlanta facing each other, because I just think rivalries are the best. And the Atlanta rivalry maybe has not been as strong since Miami came into it and everything, but and they've not been as good as they recently were. But I'm excited to see that opportunity come up.
Yeah, I agree. The game was stressful, honestly. Mm-hmm. The game was, from the beginning, it was very chippy. And I didn't realize, I thought N'Golo scored a goal by being chipping the ball in it, but it was deflection, actually. So this is the only thing, if I have a one downside of the game, our ability of not scoring was the only thing that I was... For the love of God, we had like six opportunities to score done deal goals. And for some reason, we're not shooting a gun. You are not aiming for the mass. You are trying to put it away from the mass. And I felt that we are just putting it in the mass. So that will take me to the second point, that I think from looking over the game, I think Schlegel actually was one of the top player of the game.
Yeah,
I run some numbers. I will share it in a second. But the reason why I'm saying it's a good segue, because I think that one who was lagging in this game was Facundo. I think Torres was the one who had a lot of issues, per se, in the game. He didn't finish. You think he was... I think you feel he was disconnected from the game. That's my observation.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say this whole Nashville series, it seemed like our top two guys with Maguire and Torres just could not put the ball in the back of the net. I mean, luckily we had Cartagena and N'Golo kind of get us our one goal. But yeah, I think that's the one thing. Last game, the first game of the round of three, we had 25 shots.
Yep.
Which is wild. And one goal. And it was like a beautiful goal from 25 yards out. But all the easy stuff we missed, all the simple things, all the simple finishes, the one-on-ones, time and time again, we should be putting the ball back in the net, winning. For each of these games, we should have had at least two or three goals.
Yes.
But it's our strikers. They've been on form this whole season, and even the end of the regular season. But against Nashville, we just could not put the ball in the back of the net.
And that's And this has also happened in our away game with them, the last game with them on the season. It was the same thing. We were grinding, and finally one goal, and we parked the bus. So I agree with you.
It makes me wonder, is this goalkeeper for Nashville extremely highly rated, or were we just making him look good?
I mean, I think Nashville's known for their defense, so I'll give them that. Like, they are known as a defense-heavy team. That's their MO. So you know you're not going to get a lot of points against them. Which I'm like, hey, we didn't get much points against, we didn't score many goals against them, but we got the win, the 3 points. And that's all that really matters at the end of the day.
Fun numbers from the game. Schlegel, I just put write it down, had 10 opportunities like duels with players. He won 8 out of 10. Mm-hmm. He had 7 aerial duels, and he won 5 out of the 7. He had 11 clearance and 5 recoveries. These numbers are ridiculous for Schlegel. I can't believe I'm reading these numbers about Schlegel, because Schlegel is the most light-headed defender I ever saw in my life. Mm-hmm. He's worse than Maguire when it comes to... Sorry, I have to go there. But he's worse than Maguire when it comes to light-headed. Because
what do you mean light-headed?
Light-headed means that he doesn't... So I always think that our center backs in general, center backs are more... They're wise human beings. They are very... thoughtful people. They're standing in their field, they look around. In the last 2 years, Schlegel is lightheaded by meaning out of nowhere he began to run in the front and leave in the back, and Jensen began to follow him. I wish Sniffer is in this call, because we were talking about this for now a year, that he doesn't know, he's a kid, he's a teenager, that he just run out of nowhere, do weird stuff, forget formation, forget everything. But the last 2 games, his discipline was, whoa, I was wowed by Schlegel the last 2 games.
I mean, I think it's testament to Oscar Pereja to continue to start him, even when Antonio Carlos is healthy. As I say, he's been healthy for a while, and he's like, nope, Schlegel's my man. I'm sticking with him. He's been helping us get clean sheet after clean sheet. I mean, I think, what is it, 5 out of the last 6 games we've had a clean sheet, which is pretty incredible. With the league, I feel like the MLS league, you don't get really that many runs of clean sheets, I feel like. So it's a testament to Schlegel really been...
We are the only team
really
in
been
this
playing
playoff.
Really well.
We are the only team in the playoff who didn't concede any goal in the playoffs so far. So yeah, I agree. I think my only, as we said, the only concern is our offense is not finishing. It's not. I am amazed by how Mauricio Pereira in his age is still doing what he's doing in the midfield, and he is running back and forth and doing the thing that we were missing the whole season, to the point that he's the connection that's happening between the back and front. Definitely Araujo and Cartagena they are meticulous. They are the best. They are really the greatest as a unit together. The 3 of them working together are really great.
I have to go back. Are you saying 33 is old, Andy?
In soccer, yes. That's why I don't play anymore, because I'm 40. Right. So that's why. I missed my prime already. No, but in general, you, Mo Salah is 30, and everybody's talking about him is retiring in a couple of seasons. And this is Mo Salah. So, yeah, 33 is a little bit on the older side from soccer perspective. So... And if you compare Mauricio in the beginning of the season and now, you will feel he just take his performance one step forward, because in the beginning of the season, he was abysmal and everybody was talking about him need to be benched. Honestly, everybody in Orlando City team in the first 3 months of the season, we were talking about they need to fire everybody. We need a new coach. We need everything. And unfortunately, Oscar Pereja doesn't have a contract so far, but we are in the playoff.
Now, I'd love to hear, how did you guys like the scrappiness that Orlando City... I know I've seen so many things about how Nashville fans hated it.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, I feel like Orlando City fans love it, but I'm curious how do you guys feel about the scrappy play that Orlando City tend to, you know, generally brings out?
I will wait for Noah to hear his perspective first, then I will add mine.
Well, I mean, I like it in general, especially for Orlando City, because I don't know, even just looking at the conferences, you know what the flashy teams are going to be and the teams that are supposed to, like, their identity is, sorry, we score lots of goals or we have the star players or things like that. And, like, to me, Orlando City has to find its place and its identity. And I like it being that team that can get in other teams' heads and play that high aggressive sort of play. So for me, I liked it. And I think it could actually serve us pretty well in the playoffs, especially like this kind of tournament style.
I agree with 100%, because I think if you guys remember the last couple years with Oscar Pereira specifically, we missed our ability to be very disciplined and very scrappy in the field. And that's one of the reasons why our defense was really not the greatest. That's what we're lacking. And we were a team that go and score. When we had Nani and we had DK, and that was when we scored a lot. But the moment that really impressed me, and actually, I'll go step backward first. If you guys remember the last couple of seasons, especially last season and the season before, we got out of the playoff because of Nashville. Because of that famous goal, which is why I text you guys freaking out about Alan Chapman, because with the last game on the decision day against Nashville, that goal by DK that Alan Chapman canceled it because of a foul and all of the crap that he did, that was against Nashville. And then we played Nashville in the playoff, and we lost 1-0 from them because they were playing how we played this game. And that's where I feel Orlando City trend across the whole season is playing according to the team they are playing. So you can see them, they are adjusting the type of their playing, how they play according to their opponent. But still, the scruffiness is a part of their game now. Going under your skin. I like what they did with Hani Mukhtar. I loved it.
He is completely knocked out of the game.
Yeah. They got him out of the game completely, and they went under his skin. And the other guy from Nashville, the guy from Panama, he was the other one that we went under his skin, to the point that Oscar from the sideline, he's going under the under the skin of the players. Godoy. That guy, he was so nervous and chippy and going tackling in like 10th minute of the game, which gets you a yellow card, and now you're contained. You can't go crazy on other player. I am amazed that, honestly, that Nashville didn't get more yellow card than 3, while us...
No, we ended up with all of the yellow cards that game.
Yeah, we got 5. They got 3 and we got 5. Even there it was, but it's Alan Chapman again. It's Alan Chapman, the worst referee in the MLS. So I'm glad that we didn't have weird calls. We had some weird calls, but nothing significant that destroyed the game. Any other comments about the game?
I mean, I just feel like it's exciting as a fan, as an Orlando City fan, to feel like we actually have a shot of going to the MLS final this year and actually winning it all, you know, with not only our home record, which is amazing, but even our away record, which if everything plays out, we only have one more away game that we have to play. That's against Cincinnati, if Cincinnati continues to win.
Yep.
But we even showed that we could beat them on their home soil not even a couple months ago.
Yep.
And so as an Orlando City fan who's we've only won one playoff game in the last 8 years since we've been team.
I was about to say it's not eight years in the history. This is
since 2015 when we entered the MLS.
Yeah.
Up until this year we've only had one playoff win, and that was a crazy wild PK shootout against New York.
And who was the referee?
Oh, Alan Chapman, of course.
Yep.
always. Oh, but it feels like it's the first time in our history of the MLS that we have a legitimate shot of winning the MLS Cup. And it's exciting. And so I love it. It's extremely nerve-wracking. I'm kind of glad that people are kind of seeing us as this underdog, honestly. Most people are expecting the Cincinnati's, the Philadelphia, the Columbus to kind of take over and win. So I kind of like that we're underdogs because I think we don't do well when all the pressure's on us.
Yep.
And which is so funny because, yeah, which is funny because we're ranked so high.
It is. Yeah. But people just want to expect everything from us.
Yeah.
So quickly, two things. I don't know if you guys here listen to Taylor Tolman podcast. He has a podcast now about MLS. And last week, he has actually Phil Nevels invited him on the show, and it was fun. And they start talking about Orlando City. They've been talking the whole thing about how Philadelphia is a great team and how is Cincy is a team that in the descent, not going up in the playoffs, and how they look shaky since the last five games of the season. So what he was saying about Philadelphia, and if Philadelphia has something to prove, and I personally, out of all the teams that in the East Conference I'm worried about, is Philadelphia is the team that I'm worried about. Mm. Even Kai Wagner is going to be out. He got suspended, so that's a great point. But in general, Philly is the team. But what he says in the end is what it's going to summarize our season so far. Phil Neville said, Orlando City is the team that you worry to play on when they are playing for something. Because they come and they play with a heart, and they are playing soccer as if it's a boxing game. They will come and fight with you in every single corner of the game. This is a identity that we didn't have for a long time. So I'm proud of that. Mm-hmm. Then Taylor Tolman, and he said in the end, if there is one team can win the MLS Cup, and I will not be surprised, is Orlando City. Wow. And I was, whoa!
That's surprising from him.
From him, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I'm wondering how the game that's going on right now, the Philly and New England, how it's going to end because they are 0-0 and they are in second half. And I want New England to play to win this game and get this game 2-3 because all these games are delaying and giving us opportunity to relax more so we can get ready for the next team.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the craziest season of APL, English Premier League.
Lots of big highs and lots of big lows.
Let's start with Taylor because his team is the team that's doing well on last game.
I mean that was just such a
But it's the whole season. If you guys notice, I don't know what happened to the British referees. All the English Premier League referees this year is really struggling.
Well, you see, several of them are getting sent down to the championship.
Yeah, the last one that got sent last week, I can't believe, because he's a good referee.
He's been around forever.
Is it
Anthony?
Yeah, it's so sad. What happened in Liverpool game, that was a disaster. What happened in an Arsenal game is a disaster. What happened in Tottenham game is a disaster. Every single week, it's like what they call it, something that roll around. You Americans, they have something.
It's like a merry-go-round?
Yes, thank you. That's the one I want to say.
You're an American too, Andy.
As I say,
you can't say you Americans.
I have to go there, you know. It's merry-go-round on who gonna get screwed this week. But also, on the other hand, Anthony Taylor. You're right, Naylor. Noah. Anthony Taylor is the one who got demoted lastly to the championship. So I'm also, I appreciate Postecoglou, what he said after the game and his maturity and how he said this is a soccer and this is a refereeing and it's human and all. What he said was really good in comparison to Mikel Arteta's statement on Saturday.
Klopp any week of the season.
But Klopp, that's Klopp. Klopp, we know that's Klopp. He goes say, I don't know. I don't know. And he give you the being the dumbest human being in the world. But Arteta, what he said was really inflammatory. Because Arteta's situation was, let me go there. Arsenal goal against, their goal against Newcastle doesn't make sense. Yes. The ball was out or in. I think it's in. Because if you guys remember my conversation about Germany in the World Cup last year against Korea and the ball that was out, and the conversation that I have with Taylor and with Noah about how the ball is deceiving and how you look, it's the same. It's exactly the same. So the ball was in. That's 100%. And they prove it a couple of times on Sky Sport the last couple of days. The foul, it's a very soft foul. If you are talking about a push, yes, his hand was extended 100%. Yes, but come on. It's EPL. You will never call something like this an EPL. Offside, you don't have a real angle. So how are you going to judge it? So that's the life before VAR, that you what you see in the field, you call it and call the day. Yes, there is a couple of yellow and red cards throughout the game. Yes. I agree, but again, it's the concept of a human error. We need to understand and accept the human error.
Yeah. Well, which are you guys? Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I get that managers and players they need to probably talk about refs because they're being asked about it a lot. But personally, this was maybe 3 years ago or something. After just like pulling my hair out because of things refs would do, I was just like, you know what? I'm just gonna like give up talking or feeling anything about the refs, because in my mind, it's almost they're almost like a natural disaster that takes place throughout the game, and your team just has to be good enough to prevail against it. Like United arguably had quite a few decisions go against us today in the Champions League, but it's just going to make me mad and irritable and bitter to think about that. And honestly, Manchester United should have been good enough to beat Copenhagen without every call going our way. So I do feel like, yes, the refs have been pretty sketchy this season, but also, I don't know, just from the beginning, Jurgen Klopp sort of made the narrative about the refs, and I think that sort of continued.
I have a theory also about the whole refereeing performance. I think we became very very critical of the referees in general, since the cameras and more technology got added to soccer, because now we can judge the referees with more tools than ever. So the mistakes happen in the history. Tell me about 1986 Maradona goal was hand of God. If this hand of God was always been talked about, that how they didn't see it, but it's because of the cameras. And if you go back a little bit further in the history, 1966 Germany and England, the first goal, that, and the whole debate about the ball passed the line or not. All of that, it's happened. This is a refereeing in that way. We have human beings refereeing soccer. Mistakes is a part of the game. And I think we neutralized that to the point that we are now thinking that every mistake is intentional in the game.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's, I kind of miss the days of just like no VAR reviews, no this or that. It's like, call it as you see it. There's going to be mistakes, but you're not expecting perfection out of the refs. But nowadays with everything that is there, if it's not every call is absolutely perfect, it's like everyone's livid, everyone's upset. And then you get to the point with VAR where more than half of the game, the ball's not even in play.
Yeah.
Like the Tottenham Chelsea game, I don't know if you guys saw this, 43% of the game was actually the ball in play. So out of 111 minutes, only 48 minutes were actually the ball was in play.
Oh my gosh.
Because there's like, I can't even remember how many VAR reviews were in that game. I think there was at least 6 or 7. And it just was like, time and time again, everything's getting stopped. Go to the video, stop, go to the video. And it just kills all momentum. It kills the fun of the game instead of just letting them play. And let things unfold as they unfold. You're going to miss some things. Mm-hmm. But I think we're expecting too much of the refs. And we're expecting perfection when it's like, no one's going to be perfect. And so let's just dive into that and enjoy it a little bit.
So you'd be for VAR going away.
Yeah. I mean, I get like, there's things I like. Like, I don't mind when it's the goal line technology where it's just like, hey, he gets a little buzz on his watch. Ball was in. We're moving on. Like, it was good.
Yeah. I heard somebody propose just use it for offsides, but don't use it for like going back and looking at,
fouls, handballs.
Yeah, all the stuff that's really stopping the game. Because the offsides, they sort of say, look at that. Now they've got it perfected enough. They make a decision within about 10, 20 seconds. But everything else, they just take
forever. But then you even have like handballs. They're so subjective. I feel like one ref would call it a handball, another ref would not. So I'm like, this amount of time they spend on a VAR about a call that could, either ref could go either way on it, I'm like, we don't need to spend this time. Just make a call and move on. Like,
I personally was, when you come to the handball rule, I am 40 years old and I don't know how they judge handball anymore.
Because I have no idea. <laughs> Because
like today in the Manchester game, that commentator was saying, we reached a point that the VAR is interacting with the game in the way they are changing the rules in the field. So in the original vision of the VAR, VAR is only saying that come look at it, not because they want to change judgment. It's just to confirm or decline the call. They are not saying it's a wrong or right call. It's just confirming or saying you need to look at it again. It's not.
You mean when they call the ref on the field to the camera?
Yeah, that's what the rule is. But in the Manchester United game today, it was, I believe, the two penalties and the red card on Rashford, all these are wrong calls. The two penalty for United and Copenhagen shouldn't be called. And the red card on Rashford, shouldn't be a red card. It's similar, exactly similar to what happened to, what's his face, Liverpool guy. I'm blank. In the game when he extended his foot accidentally and he got the red card out of nowhere. I never understand how that's a red card, but it's a red card. So, the whole situation of refereeing is getting ugly and it's taking away the enjoyment of the sport and watching.
Yeah.
Unless you're a Tottenham fan.
Yeah.
They're going to get excited for a couple of weeks and then...
I'm curious, Taylor. Do you feel like this is just... Like, I don't know how to pronounce his name very well because he's not my manager. But do you think he's the real deal? Or is this like... everything seems to be clicking now.
I love it.
I know it was a big step up from like Scottish league to what he's doing.
No, I'd say, I think, honestly, I think Tottenham's done better without all the limelight on them with Harry Kane, with all these big managers. Like, it's kind of like, I feel like they're much more of a team now where they're like, hey, we all got to contribute. Everybody's putting effort in. Everyone's connecting. Like, everyone's like in it for the same reason. And I love Harry Kane, and I think Harry Kane was amazing, and he's still doing great things. But I think the whole team was like, we got to get the ball to Harry Kane. He's the only way we're going to win. But now it's like, look how much it's spread out. I mean, Son's thriving, Madison's thriving, Kulusevski's thriving. Like, all these players are doing way better than they have in the past. And I think it's because they've gotten the freedom to kind of play the game as a whole team instead of funneling everything to one player. And I like that it's not a big-time manager, because clearly we can't – every big-time manager over the last, like, 4 years doesn't even last, like, maybe a year. And they come in, try to change everything instead of just like, hey, let me just like figure out who these players are and let them play the game that they like playing. And so I love what I call him, Ange, just kind of like what he's doing, how he's forming this team. I love that he's kind of like letting them play, letting them do what.
Enjoy it.
They seem to be enjoying themselves. Yeah, I think they have a lot more joy than they ever did in the last few years that I've been watching
them. And they seem to like play with a lot more courage now. Yep. Like, Mourinho and Conte are both just it's very fearful football. Like, you're just fearful that the other team's going to do something, where that high line they played against Chelsea was borderline suicidal. As it turned out to be, but it was, I mean, it's really courageous football. Yeah. And which
I love that he's like, I'm not going to change my tactics. Even if it's like, hey, we're down a man, I'm going to stick with it. He's like, I think we're going to do it. I think we can stay with it. And so, but I love it. Because really,
fans liked it.
For the longest time, we used to be like, defend and counterattack, defend and counterattack. And that's all we had.
I think I never saw Hotspurs, Tottenham like this since Martin Yeo, 2004. Right. And he was doing the same thing that Postecoglou doing. So I am excited to see Tottenham to compete on the top of the league.
Least I think it's going to be a good year. I mean, this last game, I don't think anybody could have predicted the chaos of all the VAR things, the two red cards, and then two of our starters getting injured in the first half. And it's just like, anything that could have gone wrong did. So I'm kind of like, it's one of those games. You just move on. 1,000 things went wrong. And it was still 1-1 for most of the game.
Yeah.
And it's still very reasonable. And so it wasn't until the last, 10 minutes that things kind of got out of hand. But so I still, even in that game, I still had hope. And I was like, you know what? I still think we're playing well, even down 2 men.
Mm-hmm. And I think this season is going to be interesting, because if the momentum of each team stay the same, because you have Man City is up and down. Thank God.
Oh, thank goodness.
I am so happy about that. And Haaland is not finally, his bubble is burst, and now you can see the real one, that he is not. He's not Pelé. He's not Cristiano Ronaldo. He's not Messi. He's not Harry Kane, honestly. He is a little bit a tier, or he's not mature yet. So that's my side note about Haaland. But Tottenham is 1 point away from Man City. Liverpool, they are 3 points behind City. Arsenal, 3 points behind the City. Aston Villa is just 5 points behind the City. Newcastle is 7 points. This is the top six. We're talking about top six, that maximum point between them is 7 points. That's why I hope they stay the same. Thankfully, we don't have World Cup in the middle that break a momentum. But oh my gosh, this season is gonna be in the top five, gonna be up to the end of the season.
Yeah, it's gonna be a fun year. Hopefully, I'm hoping everybody can keep the momentum and just, I hope injuries aren't the one thing that derail teams. I feel like one or two big injuries and teams just go downhill fast.
So let's talk a little bit about the not good side of this table. It's me and you.
Yeah, how are you guys feeling as some Man U fans here?
I think everything hog needs to go.
I was wondering what your thoughts
are. I think he's causing more issues in the morale and the personnel of the team more than he's fixing. The amount of issues that we've been seeing the last couple of months between Sancho situation that nobody understands 100% what's going on. The weird startups like sitting Varane and that sitting Varane and the game against Arsenal, I was, what the heck is he doing? I was. There is a couple of games I never understand what he's doing. Sorry, not Arsenal. I meant Man City. When he said Varane, he said who else? Grancho, Anthony, all of them were on the bench, and he start in the back. Evans, Maguire, and on one side Lindelof, and the other one is Dalot. And I was, I'm done. I don't understand his way of thinking. Please help me.
Well, it's crazy because it feels like two different people and two different teams from last season to this season. Like last season, everything was going our way. This guy was the savior of Old Trafford and got us a trophy. So that's, I think, the confusing thing to me is I'm like, we actually know this guy is a winner. Like he really does manage teams well, and we beat great teams on the way to the Carabao Cup win. You know, we made it to a final for the FA Cup. So he's good, but nothing's working for him now. So I think it's a tough decision if it's just like jettison him because he's never going to fix it. But he deserves some sort of trust because he actually gave us a season where we felt like we were somewhat back again. And that's been a while.
Yeah, I agree. Also,
who else is out there? That's my other thought.
Is it worth it?
Yeah, what caretaker manager could we get? Maybe bring Ollie Solskjaer back, but then who would we get in the summer? I mean, maybe some people are going to get fired, and we can pick them up.
Go find somebody in the Scottish League. It works out. It works.
Yeah. I was actually hoping they can bring. Are you gonna hate me when I say that? Ragnek back. Because you need a manager. You just need a manager who managed. Because
as a caretaker?
Yeah, as a caretaker. Yeah, not permanent. Yeah. No, not permanent. Permanent, who I saw a couple of days ago, and I said I was amazed that he's a coach now. I don't remember. Somebody from the golden era, he's a coach now.
Is it Michael Carrick?
Not Carrick, somebody else. I'm looking to remember who was that. But I think the whole thing need to be change is not only Erik ten Hag. I think the whole director situation with the Glazers want to sell and they don't want to sell is not creating stability downstream. And the old days when we had Alex Ferguson, he was the iron fist man. He was controlling everything in the stadium, not only stadium, he's controlling everything. I don't think I saw anything with a vision from Erik ten Hag when they went and signed people. They had money, but they didn't sign really anything that they need. It was more of reactive, not taking the initiative to look for what they want. So, yeah. I have a lot of question about him. Yes, I as a Man City fan, I want him to be gone because he is causing issues. He is not taking care, maybe because we are used to Sir Alex Ferguson and how he control and manages the team. So this is the standard that we were looking for. I don't know how he can survive, especially after this, what happened today.
Yeah. I mean, my only thing is, yeah, who's the caretaker and who's the next guy? I will confess, I have looked at, like, who could replace Erik ten Hag articles, just to at least see, like, who's even out there. Yeah, and I've seen some names that I've been like, okay, that would be interesting. But I do feel like they're kind of set up for failure until... It just doesn't seem that hard to get a sporting director. Like, we're Manchester United. We should go buy the best sporting director out there from the continent and hire the right people. But we kind of have this weird, we just promote from within, but these guys are no names and don't appear to be doing very well, yet that doesn't appear to challenge their jobs at all. It's only managers that are accountable for any poor run of form. Manchester United.
Oh my gosh. I research who can replace Erik ten Hag, and the first name comes up is Carlo Ancelotti. And I would say, I will take that in a heartbeat. I will have Carlo Ancelotti in a heartbeat. Or maybe Zizou.
Yeah, I feel like Zizou would almost think United is beneath him at this point. But I like the Almiron guy from Sporting Lisbon. That guy, he's done really well. Yeah, and he'd be young. We really have to support him, though. And I think if he were to come now, the structure and its problems would just eat him up. But Ancelotti could probably weather it because he just doesn't care.
Actually, I'm seeing some good names. I'm seeing Graham Potter.
Yeah, but he didn't do great at Chelsea, Andy.
Terrible. Not a great track record.
But what he did was Brighton. He is the one who built.
But what Erik ten Hag did with Ajax. I mean, I think you could make the argument of like.
Yeah. I'm saying they're in those roles because of what they did at the previous team, but.
Yeah. I want Graham Potter because I think it would be great to have like this. I don't know. I like an English team with an English manager. It just feels nice, but I'm just worried he would have another bad season.
Somebody is claiming Robert De Zerbi. He will never leave Brighton. Yeah,
I've heard him talked about for Barcelona.
Robert De Zerbi.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
No, really?
They gonna get rid of Xavi? Barcelona?
Well, maybe it was more so Real Madrid.
I was going to say, because I feel like Barcelona is like, they're pretty sold on Xavi for right now, where they're like, we're sticking with him until he really blows something up. But I think they're pretty happy with him.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing was Real Madrid and Ancelotti, because Ancelotti is... just sitting, they're rebuilding, but they're still winning everything.
Yeah.
All right. That was a good episode. I was, I'm excited for you guys to be here. Thank you. And
Of course. Thanks for having us.
I am really looking forward for more episode of the two of the famous inventions. Our famous analyzers from the European leagues, the boys. Thank you, and until next time, go City.